It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. It's been a busy couple of weeks. We've been away for a little while. Mostly my fault, as these things typically are. I've been filling in for Ballpark Frank Harnish, on the Vegas Golden Knights pregame and postgame show for all their games. Those that may or may not know, Frank was in a car accident a couple of weeks ago. He is doing better. He's progressing as the doctors would like to see him progress. And it's the least that I could do to stick up, to jump into that spot and make sure that everything goes smoothly while he's gone. And if you're listening, buddy, I hope you get better. Come back to work soon, because I'm getting pretty tired. But it's been a great experience. I've been loving every minute of it. The only downside was the Ottawa game interfered with our ability to do the podcast last week, and we were getting some flack for it. So let's just make this episode really awesome. Jesse, how you doing?
Great, man. And like you said, can't wait to see Frank back out at the rink.
Yeah, I mean,
I filled in for him last night at the Winnipeg game, and just can't wait for him to get back out there and do that. I like being on the show as a guest.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in there in absence of Frank.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man, like 90-minute post-game shows, like, they sound exciting when you think about it, and then all of a sudden you're faced with 45 minutes and you've already said everything that you need to say about the game, and then you still got to go for another 45. Like, that's been the biggest adjustment. But, you know, Clayton Hamilton, stick tap to him. He's made it pretty easy on me to just kind of jump in there and do what I got to do. And like I said, Frank, get better. We miss you, buddy. We want to see you at the rink, because that's where you belong.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better.
All right. So speaking of that Winnipeg game, I know that we're going to jump around the NHL, but initial thoughts, reactions from last night's game.
The Golden Knights are really good in Vegas,
and
yes, for whatever reason, I'm not saying any specific reason, I'm just saying teams don't seem to play as well in Vegas as they do in the other 30 cities in the NHL.
Okay, so you're alluding to the Vegas flu. I know you are. It's fine. They were here for 4 days.
That's 4 days of partying.
No, it can't be.
It can't be.
No, they're professional athletes.
They're also 20-year-old millionaires.
Oh, come on.
That live in freaking Winnipeg for most of the season. Probably all of the season. Most of these players, now, like you hear about, like, NBA players are like, oh, they live in Cleveland, but they don't have to actually live in Cleveland. They live in Miami. But, like, NHL players?
Yeah.
Their off-season homes are either in their city they play in or in Canada.
Sure.
When these guys come to Vegas, and I don't think this is going to last. I don't think this is, like, 5 years from now, teams are still going to be coming here getting trashed. But I think when a team sees they're going to Vegas for the first time ever, There's no way that those players aren't thinking to themselves, all right, guys, what are we doing the night we get there?
Okay, well, the night we get there, that's fine. That was Monday.
Well, they got here Monday after a game. I doubt that they went out and drank after. They probably went straight to the hotel and crashed. So Tuesday night,
they go out, they get trashed, they have fun.
Just wiling.
I would love to see Patrick Laine just get obliterated. I think
that,
that'd be great.
That probably happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Mark Scheifele's got a friendship with Tyler Seguin. We know Tyler Seguin's kind of a party animal, right? So.
And the thing is, I don't even think it's like, I'm not saying these guys are like crowd surfing at Hakkasan the night before the game. That's not what I'm saying.
Are you sure?
But just there's a much higher chance that at 3 a.m, they're not sleeping if they're in Vegas.
Okay, but for the sake of argument, they do that on Tuesday. They have all of Wednesday to kind of get it out of their system, recover. They've still got Thursday and Friday before the game to focus on hockey.
You said it. They're professional athletes. They treat their body like a temple.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think getting trashed for two nights in a row or a night in a row isn't going to have even a little bit of an effect a day and a half later?
I mean, I think that it will, but I think that if you're playing in the National Hockey League and you're a team that's expected to be a very good hockey club, like the Winnipeg Jets have raised those expectations at the beginning part of the season, I think that you treat this like any other game if you want to be successful. And if you can't do that, that's on your coaching staff and it's on your GM for bringing in players that just can't figure out how to be professionals. It comes down to being professional.
Yeah, but it's also an 82-game season, and this is one of the – like, when the Kings come here six times or whatever, I don't think they're getting trashed all six times.
No, probably
but when
not.
You're the Jets or when you're an Eastern Conference team that you're coming to Vegas once, it's one out of 82. One out of 82. We can. That's I honestly, like, if I was a player, that's how I would view it. Maybe I would be unprofessional, and that's probably why. That's probably why I'm not an NHL player. That's why I play at the Sahara Event Center.
But you're a championship winning goalie.
I did win the championship.
Let's talk about that.
But if it's me, it's like, you guys, we're still going to be able to play all right.
Okay.
It's one out of 82 games.
Sure.
Let's have some fun. And like I said, it's not. I don't think these guys are going. Like crazy, like blackout drunk. I think they're going out having a team dinner.
Sure.
Which a lot of teams do in every city.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that night out lasts a lot longer in Vegas.
I think that the potential is there, absolutely. But I don't know. I have a hard time thinking or believing that it's a unique to Vegas thing.
I
don't buy it. And here's why. You're like, it's one out of 82. We can take it off. No big deal. How many teams, honestly, how many teams miss the playoffs by 1 or 2 points?
Yeah, but they're not thinking about it like that.
But they have to. You can't take games off in the NHL. If you want to be a playoff team, you can't take games off. Period.
Did Winnipeg look good in the first period?
I think they looked okay. I don't think they looked awful, but they didn't look great.
They didn't look like they did the last six games before that.
I'm not saying that what you're. I'm not saying that it's false. I think that there's absolutely something to
Chicago,
no, Patrick,
Boston.
I mean, listen,
St. Louis. Well, St. Louis looked good.
St. Louis looked fine. Okay. I look at Vladimir Tarasenko. I don't think he's buying into that crap. Like I think Tarasenko comes here. He wants to win a championship.
Well, St. Louis looked good. They dominated. They should have won that game, but they didn't. But yeah. Boston looked awful.
But see, that's the thing. Boston didn't look any different in Boston. I mean, that the game,
well,
the game in Vegas versus Boston versus the game against Boston in Boston had no flow whatsoever. The entire game, both games were mirror images of each other.
Boston looked a lot better in Boston, though, but that could just be playing on your home ice. But
yep.
Chicago, there was a lot of whispers that Chicago partied hard out here.
I have no
they
doubt.
They looked awful.
And they've been pretty bad ever since.
Man, they're still hungover from Vegas a week and a half ago.
I mean, Patrick Kane may never be the same player again.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't want to make this sound like I think like the only reason they're winning in Vegas is because teams are getting trashed. But I think it absolutely is harder to concentrate, and I think I have no doubt in my mind that teams are less focused on hockey when they're here than in any other city.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
When I say less focused, maybe it's only 5% difference of focus.
Right.
But when you're playing at the top level and all these athletes are so good, even a little edge like that can make a difference.
You know, and part of what I saw from Winnipeg last night, too, is a team that they didn't start great. And then by midway through the second period, they were frustrated. I mean, they were incredibly... Were you really that concerned? You're that worried about us going over the air? We don't swear on this podcast.
No, I just had to make sure.
What was that?
I thought you wouldn't notice. I just had
You thought we wouldn't notice sound in our ear? What are you talking about?
What was it?
I wasn't trying to draw this out like this, but no. Anyway.
It's okay. We have fun.
Live radio people.
You distracted me. That's all.
So sorry.
Like, Winnipeg was so incredibly frustrated, and I think that had a lot to do with the Golden Knights' ability to wear them down in the first period. And we talked about it a little bit before we jumped on the mics here. For a very physical team like the Winnipeg Jets, they're not really used to teams getting in and hitting them. And a player that I want to highlight right now is William Carrier. I thought, without getting on the score sheet, he had a tremendous impact on a lot of the good that went well for the Vegas Golden Knights last night. He had a couple of big, big hits that set the tone early, and he is just a relentless forechecker. I love watching William Carrier play. I thought he had a heck of a game last night, and that whole fourth line, the last two games, have been one of those spark plug lines that you put them out there when you need something, and they always deliver.
Absolutely, and I think another thing that Carrier does, in addition to the hitting and the forechecking, is the Golden Knights don't have a lot of guys that can carry the puck across the blue line into the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. And I think Carrier is one of the better guys at that. One, he's first off, he's the fastest player on the team, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
in a straight line. And second, he's very good at just carrying the puck with one, hit the stick with one hand and kind of using his body to shield the player and getting in. And he's drawn multiple penalties this season just bull rushing the net like that and having they have to slash him or hook him. He's creating a lot. And like you say, didn't get on the score sheet. I tweeted, I think, during like the second period, this guy is a wrecking ball. He's just destroying Winnipeg, like single hand. Every time he gets the puck, he just goes straight at the net.
No, and that's the great thing about how he plays. You talk about, you know, a lot of guys that go east-west when they get to the blue line. And Patrick Kane is one of those guys that comes to mind. He's talented enough to stick handle in a phone book, and he can – phone booth. Yep, there it is. I'm tired, people. Just cut me some slack. But he's able to go east-west across the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
William Carrier doesn't do that.
No.
He attacks the blue line. He gains the blue line, and he gets that inside edge and cuts around, and he's in on net. And there's nothing that you could do about it. He's done that to some very good defensemen so far this year. So I like what he brings to the table as far as the physicality. I like that he doesn't really focus on anything but his job and what he needs to do to be successful. And you look at him. He's relishing this opportunity because he was up and down in Buffalo, up and down in Buffalo. You don't really know where to put him. They could use him in Buffalo. Right now, you look at that team, they could use a guy that just puts his head down, goes to the net, forces other teams to make penalties. I mean, they could use him, and we've got him, and he wants to be an NHL player, and I think that's shown in every game that he's played so far this year.
How many teams in the NHL are saying that right now? Looking at the player that they lost, like Carlson, for example, who's playing out of his mind right now, the Blue Jackets are looking at him like, oh, Alex Tuch, the Wild are sitting there thinking, man, why didn't we just let him take somebody instead of giving that guy up? There are a lot of players on this. The Nashville Predators with James Neal. There are a lot of players on this team that teams are probably thinking, man, maybe we should have given him the ice time to see.
Yeah, and it's funny that you bring that up with Minnesota, because there was a quote from Bruce Boudreau last week in which he basically said Matt Dumba sucks.
Yes.
And you go back to the expansion draft, and you go back to what everyone thought George McPhee was trying to get out of Minnesota, and it was Matt Dumba.
Or Brodin.
Mm-hmm. So you look at that scenario, and then you look at what we have now, and then you look at the situation that's going on in Minnesota where they're not healthy. They could absolutely use Eric Howla. They could absolutely use Alex Tuch, and they don't have that now. There's a lot of pissed off teams around the NHL because of the Golden Knights.
I was a huge Dumba fan. Mm-hmm. I wanted him bad.
Yep.
But now looking at it, it's like Dumba's good, but I think Halla and Tuch combined might be that's a better haul. And they go McPhee comes out looking good on a lot of these picks.
Yeah.
These teams, and I don't think it's partly Turk is a good coach. And this staff has them working good together, but it's partly just these guys needed an opportunity and they just didn't. And we talked about it a lot before they played any games. Mm-hmm. So many of these players are going to get so many more minutes. Oscar Lindberg's another guy that's getting a lot more minutes than they ever got on their previous teams. And Nate Schmidt, a guy that was just buried in Washington.
We're 16 games in. William Carlson has as many goals so far this year than he had all last year.
And he's had them all in the last 10 games.
Exactly.
In the last 10 games, he has as many goals as he did last year.
And I believe he's 6-6, so 12 points on the year in 16 games. He's playing great. David Perron, too. I mean, you know, David Perron's a guy that's been around the league for a long time, and he was kind of pushed back into that second, third line role. And while that may be, it's hard to say if the Riley Smith line is your first line or if the James Neal line is your first line. It doesn't really matter because they get about equal ice time anyway.
Yeah.
But David Perron is now a leader. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't a leader in St. Louis. They had that all taken care of already.
Yep.
So now he's looked at as the guy, and he's relishing that.
And that's, like I said, a lot of players on this team. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I don't want to like make it sound like these teams were stupid for giving, because like these teams, they had a lot of guys in front of them. Like, you can't blame Washington for not giving Nate Schmidt ice time. Like, they had guys in front of him that had earned their ice time. But it's just very fortunate for the Golden Knights, and it was a great job by the NHL scouts that they sent out to all these games, and they've hit on almost all. Like, who's playing poorly on this team right now? Who's bad? Like, who would you look at and say, man, what a screw up by picking that guy?
I don't think there's anyone that I would say that about. I think that there are some guys that are in the lineup pretty regularly that could show a little bit more. Braden McNabb is absolutely one of them. But I said it from day one when Braden McNabb was a selection. I think that he's probably going to be one of the weaker defensemen because he played a lot with Drew Doughty.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're playing with a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman, he can make you look really good. I've never been impressed with Braden McNabb. And you see it how many times, at least on the road trip, did you see Braden McNabb try to line up a giant hit at the expense of playing defense or commit a penalty when his team was finally starting to get back into the game, finally starting to get their legs back? I mean, that's who he is.
Yeah. He's struggled a little bit. I wouldn't say he's played terrible, but yeah, he's probably struggled more than any player on the team.
I think it's not about struggling. It's not taking advantage of the opportunity he has in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of guys where I think they're in this situation where they can carve out a niche for themselves on this team. And like everybody on this team right now is playing to be here in 3 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Some guys are playing themselves into that role, and there are a couple that are playing themselves out of that role. I see Braden McNabb is playing himself out of that role.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, obviously, 16 games, you still got a lot of hockey to play, but yeah, I agree.
Okay, so one last guy, and then we're gonna take a little look around the NHL, and then we're gonna come back to Vegas. Derek Englund, offensive juggernaut.
My man, that was my story last night after the game. Derek Englund is known for two things.
Yep,
being a solid defenseman, mm-hmm, and being from Las Vegas.
Yep.
Well, living in Las Vegas.
He's been here a long
time. He's now adding offensive savant to that list. The guy. Move over Colin Miller, Shea Theodore, Derek Englund. My favorite part of the entire story.
Yeah.
The last quote, I was talking to Perron,
uh-huh,
and I go up to him and I'm trying to like just set up the questions. Yeah. And I'm like, so I know Derek Englund, he's not really known for his offense, but before I could even get it out of my mouth, he cuts me off and goes, oh, he needs to be on the power play.
Yeah, I read that. I read that at like 1:45 a.m. last night, and I was just dying, dying. Yeah. It was great.
Clearly, he's joking, but Englund has. It's not just the. I mean, obviously, that goal where he just sniped.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it?
That was Frederick Anderson.
Yeah. Frederick just got sniped by Derek Englund.
What did you say? That should go on his tombstone?
Yeah. Frederick Anderson, if you get sniped by Derek Englund, it should go on your tombstone.
Frederick Anderson.
1987 to 2058.
Yeah.
This man was sniped by Derek Englund.
Sniped by Derek Englund in Toronto.
In Toronto. But it's not just that shot, or it's not just like last night, that drop pass that he left for Perron, mm-hmm, and then he proceeded. To me, the most important part was then he skated in front of the goalie and, mm-hmm, made it a difficult shot to see.
Yep.
It's not just the ones where he's getting on the scoreboard. There were multiple times where he just went power forward on us,
yeah,
and brought the puck from his own behind his own net all the way into the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something you see from Derek Englund. And him and McNabb, especially from Ken over at Sinbin,
yep,
have been getting a lot of crap for not being able to move the puck. And I think England's been doing a much better job of it in the last like three games about.
Okay, I'm on the same wavelength as Ken with the McNabb and Englund pairing because I think there's a better pairing out there that could be more consistent, and I think it's 5-27.
I want Shea with Englund as well.
I do, absolutely. And that's, every time I talk about McNabb and Englund, it's more a shot at McNabb than it is a shot, mm-hmm, at Englund. Because I think, by and large, Englund's been the better of the two, period.
Yeah.
So that's my beef, and we'll talk about that later when we talk about Shea Theodore. But I think Shea Theodore should be on a defensive pair with Derek Englund. And then if Derek Englund needs a rest, you can rotate in McNabb and Merrill, mm-hmm, and I think that'd be fine. But it's the play away from the puck it's exactly what you talked about. The drop pass to Perron and then the center lane drive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times do you see forwards forget to center lane drive? They make a drop pass, then they just kind of dipsy doodle around and nothing happens. There's no way that you can back off your opponent if you don't drive hard to the net.
Yep.
Derek Englund did everything right on that play. Everything. And I like the quote from David Perron. The only difference is that he's a little bit more patient with the puck. He's holding on to it a little bit longer. And then the other quote that I thought really played into this was from Luca Spezza last night in the locker room. Spezza said, there's no restrictions on us from our coaching staff. If we have a moment to jump up into the play, that's expected. It's no one's going to say, ah, Luca, you jumped in, you fanned on the shot, and it was a 2-on-1 the other way, and we got scored on, you're benched. That's not going to happen on this team.
And Spezza, by the way, with a absolute laser of a slap shot for the first goal last night. Yeah. Another guy that doesn't score often, but jumped into the play.
No, and then remember back to when this team was, it was right before the beginning of the year. It was after a couple of pretty rough preseason games at home. And we were like, man, this team cannot break the puck out of their own zone. And then on that Perron goal, it was four Golden Knights touched the puck before the puck went into the net. It was a clean breakout. It was speed through the neutral zone. It was carrying the puck over the offensive blue line, not dumping it in. I mean, everything was going right for this team last night.
This team has gotten better and better, and it's clearly the reason is because they practice the crap out of it. If you go watch a Golden Knights practice, there's no drill that they practice longer than getting the puck out of the coach fires the puck behind the net, the goalie goes back and gets it, and they drill getting the puck out of their own zone. They've been drilling it every day in practice since training camp. They're still not great at it, but that's a personnel thing. They just don't have puck movers. It's something that that we knew they would struggle with. It's something that they have struggled with, but they're getting better. And a lot of these goals that they've been giving up are not because of the goalies. I will repeat, they are not because of the goalies.
Wait, so what you're telling me is that in Montreal, after the second goal was scored on Maxime Lagacé, in spite of the fact that he made like 8 or 9 really, really high quality saves before that second goal was scored, what you're telling me is he should not have been pulled?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. But anyways, after that little side note, it's most of the goals they've given up this season. If you were to go back and go to every goal they've given up and pinpoint a reason, a lot of them have been because they can't get it out of their own zone and they turn it over. And the better they get at that, the fewer goals they're going to give up, and this team's only going to get better.
Yeah, and I think it was pretty telling when George McPhee addressed us a couple of days ago, and he was talking about Shea Theodore, and he said of Shea Theodore, he's a little bit behind, but that's because he hasn't had a month and a half to get better like this team has. And then the other part to that quote was, every couple of weeks in the NHL, the intensity's ratcheted up a little bit, and you've got to get better throughout the course of the season to continue to be a good team. And you can see the progression from the Golden Knights, who couldn't win a game at home in the preseason, to the Golden Knights, who can't lose at home in the regular season, when everything matters and everyone's gotten better and everyone's in mid-season form. And listen, for as much crap as we give a Gerard Gallant when he doesn't really answer our questions about in-game decisions or moving the lines around or whether or not he even looks at goalies on the bench, I mean, the guy's a hell of a hockey coach.
He does a great job of... I don't know if Gallant's that great when it comes to schemes or when it comes to X's and O's or when it comes to matching lines. I think what he does is the number one job of a coach, and that's get your players to play to the best of their ability. And he's just emotionally and just the type of guy he is, he instills confidence in them. He tells them, do what you want to do. I don't want you to think. I just want you to play.
Yeah.
And he's got every player on this team playing, almost, I would say almost every single player on this team playing to the best of their ability, playing the best hockey they've ever played in their career.
Yeah.
And that's what the coach's job is.
Yeah. And they're a relentless bunch. They will literally not stop. Even if they're getting outplayed, even if they're down, I haven't seen a moment, even in third period collapses, where they haven't tried to get it going again.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Man, imagine when they get Fleury back. Remember how good it was so long ago.
We got to remember how good
Fleury was at the beginning of the year.
He was fantastic.
I talked to goalie coach Dave Pryor for a story that will be in Tuesday's paper, and it'll be up. Nobody reads the paper. It'll be online Tuesday. I don't even read the paper, and I work for the paper.
That's ridiculous.
It'll be online on Tuesday. A really, really good interview with Dave Pryor. One of the best interviews of my journalistic career.
Yeah.
He was outstanding. And he mentioned that that Fleury was playing some of the best hockey of his entire career. The beginning of the season.
Hands down. I mean, the guy was absolutely phenomenal for the Golden Knights for the first four games of the season until he got hurt. And, you know, he's going to come back. And he'll when he does, he will be the number one goalie. And just keep that in mind when you look at what this team might be able to do throughout the rest of the season.
Because Lagasse and Dansk and even Subban have played well in his absence. And like I said, I'm not blaming any of the losses on the road trip on the goalie,
mm-hmm.
but they have not been as good as Fleury is.
No. And really quick on Lagasse, I think the win in Ottawa was huge for his mental health when mm-hmm. it comes to the goalie position. Because, I mean, think about it. You see Fleury, he plays great. He goes down with an injury. You see Malcolm Subban comes in. All he does is win. He goes down with an injury. Oscar Dansk comes in. All he does is win. Goes down with an injury. And then you got Lagasse, who can't win a game to save his life. Not because he's doing anything wrong.
But
it's
he
just,
feels like, oh, man, I'm the
exactly.
one that screwed up the streak.
Yeah, there was a graphic on NHL.com or NHL Network or whatever it was. And it was just like, you know. 3-1, 2-0, 3-0, 1-4-1. And it's just like, oh my God, it sucks. But I think the win in Ottawa was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Toronto, it was a little rough at the beginning. But after that point, he kept his team in it and allowed them to get a point out of that game. And then I thought he was really, really good in Montreal.
The dude stoned Austin Matthews three times.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Twice in the game and once in shootout.
Yeah.
That's just that alone, the confidence that gives a goalie that was playing in the AHL 2 weeks ago
right.
is unbelievable.
And you saw how good he could be last night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the save on Mark Scheifele was just I can't even maybe top 10 saves I've ever seen in my entire life.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay, I don't know about
that.
I would have said top 10 this season.
Listen, the extension that he got on
that.
It
was good.
He didn't panic either. It was just like he read the play really, really well. I mean, I don't know.
His east-west movement, his back-and-forth movement in the goal is really, really exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's his strongest. His weakest point is rebounds in front of the net.
Yeah.
His strongest point is east-to-west movement. That guy gets across the net. He's had multiple saves, not as good as that one, but multiple saves where he's flown across the net and did the splits and got the pad on it.
But the thing about that save that I think I liked is you see the progression of Max Lagasse. At the beginning, when he first came in, he would have flown 3 feet out of the net.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He came across, and he didn't come. He came across under control, and that I think was the biggest thing is that you're seeing him, literally seeing him get better every single game that he plays
in a matter of weeks.
Yeah,
and that is why Dave Pryor should be the first non-head coach in the history of hockey to win Coach of the Year.
Could he win the league MVP?
League MVP, Coach of the Year, Calder Trophy. Give him everything.
Well, now that you've got this open relationship with Dave Pryor, we need to get him on the podcast.
I would love to have Dave Pryor. He's such a nice guy, such a cool guy. I'm actually excited to write that story for Tuesday. He was a great interview. Dave Pryor is a really good guy, and he's an even better goalie coach.
Awesome. So you got that to look forward to in print. Hopefully soon you'll have that to look forward to on the podcast. Now, we're going to go ahead and switch gears a little bit. It's weird. We haven't really done one of these right after a game, so I just freshen our minds. But we're going to look around the NHL, and there was something that happened last week that's kind of a big deal, depending on your allegiances, who you root for. But then again, it's also kind of a big deal when you think that Joe Sakic is the worst GM in the history of the NHL, and it turns out that maybe, just maybe, he isn't. So Matt Duchene was traded. It was a three-way trade. We're not going to really get into the prospects and all that stuff, but essentially what comes back to Colorado is two first-round picks because Ottawa gave up their first-round pick from this year's draft, also another one next year, and then a third-round pick. Nashville gives up a second-round pick that goes back to Colorado, and then there's a couple of players, a couple of prospects, a goalie. So the haul that Joe Sakic was able to get for Matt Duchene was significant. and he buys himself time because he's got a couple of prospects that are going to need to develop, but he's also got three picks now and three relatively high picks over the next couple of years. So what Joe Sakic does with these picks is really going to determine what he got out of this trade. What are your thoughts as a Colorado Avalanche fan?
I think, like you said, it's a significant haul, and it's even more significant. He did an even better job when you consider the fact that everyone in the world knew he had to trade Matt Duchene. Trades are all about leverage. Mm-hmm. And if it was, if Matt Duchene was playing great and he loved Colorado, it's easy to get a haul like that for him.
Yeah.
But when it's public knowledge that he absolutely despises the organization, wants nothing to do with playing there, and it's been that way for over a year, the fact that Sakic was still able to get all these picks and prospects for a guy that everyone knew was on his way out, to me, that's what makes it most impressive.
And what I like about Joe Sakic in this regard is that he didn't overreact to what his team's doing right now. Like, could he have probably gotten a little bit less future considerations and maybe gotten a player that he can insert into the lineup right now because they started off well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. But he didn't, and I like that.
Could have got Kyle Turris. Probably. Probably could have just, if you think about it, could have just left Nashville out of that trade completely and just took a couple first-rounders and Turris.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. But would that have made them better?
It would have made them better right now, but not 5 years from now.
Exactly.
I completely agree.
Exactly. So I'm going to give Joe Sakic an incomplete at this point because we got to see what he comes up with. But I think just in terms of overall volume, I think he did really well.
He really did. Especially considering the circumstances. And I don't think anyone really lost this trade. Some trades just work for most. I think Ottawa got the worst end of it.
Yeah.
But exactly. But Ottawa wanted a immediate impact player, and we've talked about Ottawa on this podcast a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
They've got solid goaltending. They're a very good defensive team. Obviously, Erik Karlsson's the best defenseman in the league.
Sure.
They just don't have scoring, and they have to win these games 2-1,
mm-hmm.
3-2. You get a guy like Duchene who can come in there and put the puck in the net. I don't think that they gave up a lot, but mm-hmm. I think I can see why Ottawa would want to do this. And then obviously Nashville is extremely strong up the middle now.
Yep. Now I like Nashville because Kyle Turris is more comfortable as a 2C. He just is. And that's what he's going to be. And he's going to slot into that role. And there aren't going to be giant expectations raised on him. He signed a 6-year, $36 million contract upon being traded to the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. They've got their second center locked up for the next 6 years. And I think it's definitely a step in the right direction for a team that I don't think they're going to be dominant in the regular season, but I think they're going to be one of those more difficult opponents when it comes to the playoffs because they're good on defense. They've got balanced scoring once Ryan Johansson figures out how to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, he's struggling.
He is struggling. And maybe it's because of the surgery that he had last year. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's still trying to figure out all that, but once he gets back to what he was doing last year, I think they're going to be a pretty dangerous team.
PK also not playing great.
No, he's not. He didn't play really well all last season anyway. I just think it's taken a little bit longer for them to really adjust to everything that's going on. But then you also look at there's some new pieces. They don't have Mike Richards. They don't have James Neal. Those are two veteran guys that were really able to take command of that room. And I don't have anything against Roman Josi, but I'm not sure that he's the best choice when it comes to a captain, mainly because I just don't think that he commands a room like a Shea Weber or a Mike, not a Mike Richards, what was his name? Was it the captain? The Mike Fisher.
Fisher.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Carrie Underwood's husband.
Yeah, Mr. Carrie Underwood. you can see why it was forgettable. but no, seriously, like I think this trade really, really works out in Nashville's favor. And then it brings me to Ottawa. And here's my main concern with Ottawa. Why didn't they do this last year at the trade deadline?
I think everything about this Duchene trade is, why did it take this long?
And that's my only complaint. Mm-hmm. Because I think Duchene will probably be just fine. He'll be slightly better than Kyle Turris because the numbers show he's slightly better than Kyle Turris.
I think Duchene's I wouldn't say he's a lot better, but I think it's more than slightly. I think Matt Duchene is better than Kyle Turris.
I think Matt Duchene has more upside right now than Kyle Turris does, but up until this point in their career, they've got pretty similar numbers in most of the major offensive categories.
This is true, but Turris is also playing with Carlson and with a team that made it to the conference finals last year, Duchene's playing on a Colorado. Steaming pile of garbage.
Well, there's some talent there.
There's a lot of talent that just doesn't play well on the ice.
Yeah, that's a good point. So
7-0.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. This is what I don't understand. They've wanted Duchene probably since it was out there that he wanted to be traded. They went within one goal of going to the Stanley Cup Finals last year when the East outside of the Pittsburgh Penguins was absolutely wide open, there for the taking. Why did they go for Alexander Burroughs at the trade deadline last year? Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they pull the trigger on this? Because if you look at it, Nashville probably would have loved to have had Kyle Turris last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this just screams of a trade that should have been done 8 months ago.
I agree.
That part I don't understand.
Yeah.
Going forward, it makes sense.
I think all three teams did all right. Yeah. I think Ottawa got the worst of it. I think Colorado got the best of it. Nashville is in the middle, and they did solid. But I think it's good for all three teams.
What about Duchene? Do you think he re-signs in Ottawa?
It all depends on this season.
Yeah.
I think Matt Duchene has been painted as like a problem child kind of because of this whole situation. I don't think that's the case.
I don't either.
There was so much dysfunction in Colorado that I don't blame the kid for wanting to get out. I think, for one, I don't think Ottawa's a great hockey town. And I think it kind of gets glossed over because it's in Canada and you just assume.
Right.
But remember, they couldn't sell out games in the Eastern Conference Finals.
No, I totally agree.
So if this team plays well, the city rallies around him, the fans become huge Duchene fans, mm-hmm. I could absolutely see him re-signing there. But it's not like it should happen. Like, I feel like it's this season will determine that.
So wait and see. Yeah. What does Ottawa have to do this year to make this trade make sense to the diehards that were on the fence, off the fence, when, okay, this might be happening, it might be happening, and they're like, Matt Duchene's great, Matt Duchene sucks. Like, what does Ottawa need to do to make this work this year?
A playoff run. I'm not going to say they need to make the Stanley Cup Finals, mm-hmm. because even though they are one goal away from that, I mean, there's so much luck that it takes to make the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, you can be a really good team. The Capitals are the perfect example. You can be a really good team. Or, like, Columbus last year was a really, really, really good team, and they just happened to draw the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, and they gave them a hell of a series, but they're the back-to-back defending champions.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and say Ottawa has to make the Stanley Cup Finals for this to be a success, but they need a play. They can't lose in the first round of the playoffs. They need to make the playoffs and win at least a series.
At least win a series.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm pretty much there with you.
And in my opinion, even though they are one goal away, if you win a series and you go into that next series, I feel like they look who it is.
I didn't see it. Who was
Ballpark
there?
Frank?
What?
Outside our door.
Come on in, bud.
Come on in.
Come on in, bud. Him. Hey, how's it going? Can we get an extra mic? Yeah, we can get an extra mic. You want to jump on here and talk about Austin Matthews being hurt? We do that. All right. That's a good point. That's a good point. So
we are joined by Frank Harnish.
Yeah. This is a podcast. We're going to call you Ballpark. Ballpark Frank.
Call me whatever you want to.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm alive.
Well, there it is. There it is. So did you watch the game last night?
I've watched every game.
Yeah?
Yes.
Well, what were your impressions?
I thought it might have been the best game that they played all year. I mean, they looked dominant. They were clicking offensively, defensively. Mm-hmm. Lagasse seems like he's getting more comfortable every game that he's in the net.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a great performance. I was wondering how they'd come back after that road trip where they only won one game. And they came back, and that home cooking was there for them again, and they excelled.
So can you honestly tell me that I'm the jinx on the road? Because ever since I've been doing the pregame, postgame, when they're on the road, they can't win.
With my latest escapades on the road, I don't think anybody's a jinx around here. So,
there you go. Good to see you're in good spirits, man. It's good to see you.
You know, it's funny when they were when I had the accident and they were pulling me down Flamingo towards the hospital. I guess Mark Seidel, our PD, was on the phone with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept on telling him, I'm like, you guys are going the wrong way. You got to turn around. I got a show to do, and then we got a hockey game. They're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I got to do the Vegas Golden Knights show. And they're like, sir, you got a massive cut on your head, and we think you might have a broken neck. We're taking you to the hospital. And I reached up, and that's when I realized I had a cut in my head, and there was blood all over my hand. And I said, can you put a Band-Aid or something on it so we can we take care of this crap after the game tonight? Please, I've got to go do the show. They wouldn't listen.
That's the hockey mentality right there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, stitched up a little bit, but they didn't stitch it. They stapled it. So there I was the night before Halloween. They're putting staples in my head. I have a screw in my neck, so I'm like, great. I have staples and screws. I'm Frankenstein, but I'm stuck in the hospital. I can't even go out to a party or anything. So.
Man. That's all bad.
Oh, man. So
they looked at me like I had three heads. They thought I was crazy.
Yeah. Well, hey, but that's the hockey mentality. That's what you bring to the pregame. We can't wait to see you back out there.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back out there. I damn near snuck over there yesterday, but I thought I might catch some flack for it if I did. So.
Oh, you were gonna go down to. What,
I was
the beer
gonna
house,
try
or?
To. No, I was gonna oh, try to go to the game last night.
Oh, nice. Well, but, man, listen. Whenever you get back, we just want to make sure that you're 100% ready to go and. No one can do what you do, period. So just do what you got to do to get better.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'd like to thank you guys for all filling in. Everybody doing a great job and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I mean, I trust me, I miss it. The one thing that has really blown me away is the outpouring that I have received. I've gotten way more text and stuff like that than I ever imagined. And that's been really... It's been a lot. It's been helpful and therapeutic and everything, and this has definitely been an eye-opening experience. Because, you know, when sometimes you sit around and you think, man, I'm working a lot of hours and I'm doing this and that, and, mm-hmm. Oh, my life ain't that great. Trust me, I want my crappy, not-so-great life back.
So what about the nurses? How are they? Did they treat you well?
The nurses treated me fine because I told them every time they came in to do anything, I said, you are the boss. Mm-hmm. Whatever you need to do, do it, because... Your job is to get me better, and my job is to get the hell out of here. And after having the surgery on my neck for a broken neck, I actually talked them into letting me out the next day. So I've actually been home since the day after I had the surgery.
Awesome.
Which they're not supposed to do, I guess, but I might have told a white lie here or there to get out.
Oh,
but,
just a few, right? here's a funny story, because I visited you in the hospital the day after you had your neck surgery, and you told me a great story about how you managed to get the neck surgery the day that you got it with your surgeon. Just tell that story.
Well, the surgeon came in, and I was talking to him. He introduced himself. Hi, I'm Dr. Smith. I'm the best in the world, yada, yada, yada. And you know what? That's exactly the attitude I want in a surgeon when he's coming in to work on my neck. And it actually turns out I found out that he actually might be the best in the world, too. So, but we were talking a little bit, and Every time any nurse or anybody talked to me, they asked the same questions. What's your name? What's your date of birth? What's, because I think they were trying to see if I was in shock or completely out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor did the same thing, and he was asking me what I do in that, and I mentioned that I do the Golden Knights, you know, the pregame and postgame and Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with you and Clayton, and, you know, Jesse sits in a lot with us on the pregame and that for the games and everything. And he was like, oh, well, I like the Golden Knights. I got one of their hats. And I'm like, oh, well, you should get a jersey or something like that, too. I said, have you been to a game? And he goes, oh, I haven't been to a game. And I said, well, you know, if you want to go to the game, I could maybe help you out or something like that. And we're supposed to do this surgery on Tuesday. He told me that he came in Tuesday morning at like 6 o'clock in the morning and said, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know my slate was so full. I don't have room. So we're going to have to wait till tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, man, I really want to get back on the air. And he's like, oh, yeah, we talked. And, you know, you do the Golden Knights games? Oh, yeah, well, unfortunately, we can't do it till Wednesday. An hour and a half later, the nurses come up. Yeah, we're prepping you for surgery. He squeezed me in and got me in there because he said, yeah, you need to be back on air because you guys do a good job and that kind of stuff. So,
All right. Now,
whether he really actually listened or not, I really don't give a damn because the bottom line is he did the surgery. He put the thing that I didn't know about, I have like two little incisions where I guess I put the screw in the front of my neck, which I didn't know about.
Yeah.
I still got to get these staples out of my head, but I just want to start walking around. I want to turn. You know, it's funny because my insurance company called and they said, "Yeah, well, you are okay to for a rent a car. Do you want us to set that up?" And I'm like, "I can't turn my head."
Right.
Yeah, that'd not be good.
I mean, I was dangerous enough on the road before. I'm turning on my blinker. Get out of my way.
So what's the latest update with you? When do we know when you're going to be back?
I have a doctor's appointment on Monday. They said that I'm out at least 4 weeks. I'm hoping that that will not be the case.
Okay.
I see you got the Movember stash going, man. I like it.
Oh, it's nice.
I have the – I'm lucky when I can shower and wash my hair and that kind of stuff. So if I shave, it's a luxury.
Accidental Movember stash.
Yeah, well, I mean, might be the best on the team.
I had a stash before anyhow, but, yeah, it's definitely growing a little bit wilder now because it's like somehow that just isn't a priority right now.
Hey, I don't blame you.
No, absolutely.
I mean, I could never compete with your stash, though.
That's what I keep trying to tell these players on the Golden Knights. Have you seen they're all growing them out?
Well, what I saw was, because I haven't been over to the facility for a while, what I saw was Vadim Shipachov said, "I can't ever grow a stash like Jesse, so I'm going back to Russia."
You know what? It's great that you brought that up, because do you have a few minutes to hang, or you gotta get out of here?
Dude, I have 24/7 to kill these days.
Okay, all right. So we're just going to do this. We're going to finish up the podcast with Frank in as well, and we're going to talk about Vadim Shipachov, because obviously this is the biggest story that's going on with the Vegas Golden Knights right now. Mainly because we all knew it was happening. We all knew it was going to come to pass. And George McPhee confirmed it last week. Do you buy what George McPhee is selling when it comes to Vadim Shipachov?
I think it's somewhere in between. Shipachov came out with his statements today.
I know, and they were interesting.
And I think I don't think Shipachov's completely right. I think McPhee is also, I don't think McPhee said anything that's untrue, but I think he's
stretching.
He's stretching some things. I think he's leaving some things out to make the team look good. I think it's somewhere in between. I think it's simply, I don't think they misjudged the talent of Vadim Shipachov.
Mm-hmm.
I think they misjudged the character. I think he came in and was a little more entitled than they thought he would be. I don't think Gallant was thrilled with his work ethic in practice. I think they thought, we can send him down to the AHL, he'll get more accustomed to the North American game with a smaller rink, and they misjudged Shipachov because he obviously responded extremely poor to that. And I think in the end they were like, let's just cut ties. This didn't work out. We didn't lose anything. They didn't lose any draft picks. It's not like they gave anything up to get Shipachov. He gave all of the signing bonus back, 99% of it back. They didn't lose anything. It was a nice try. It sucks it didn't work out, but it just didn't work out.
So how much of Shipachov do you think was, we signed him before we had any players? Because this is kind of where I'm going with this, is I think McPhee looked at Shipachov and is like, this is going to be our best player. He's going to be our top line center. He's going to be able to facilitate. We know what he can do in a professional league, albeit the KHL, not the NHL. We have no idea what's going to be on this team. We have no clue. And then you get to the expansion draft, you get to these players, and you say, okay, well, that's more scoring than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's a better option there. That's a better option there. We've got five centers, six centers that could actually be really good centers in this league. And then all of a sudden, Shipachov goes from the guy to a guy. And when you pay a guy $4.5 million a season, and you don't see him fitting in, or he's being outperformed by guys that are making significantly less, that are working harder than he is, that have been outplaying him, you don't want to pay $4.5 million for a guy on the fourth line or in the AHL. So I think the part that I find most interesting about this is when Shipachov said he got a transfer slip when he was sent down to the AHL. I think that was the writing on the wall. Like, hey, you don't want to be here. Russia's right across the pond. Like, go ahead.
I think when he, because he said he got a slip like right when they sent him to the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just speculation. I think Shipachov was kept in the dark by his agent. I think his agent was asking for a way out to McPhee, and that was when he got the transfer slip. I don't think McPhee sent him to Chicago and was like, oh, and by the way, because that's clearly showing that they don't want you.
Sure.
I don't think that's what happened. I think they sent him to the AHL with the full intention of he can work on his game there. The agent and Shipachov weren't happy. They came back to McPhee, and McPhee's like, all right, screw you, take this.
Yeah, I kind of think it's a little bit like that as well. And the other thing I think when the Golden Knights drafted him, when they signed him as the free agent, mm-hmm. and then, like we said, went into the expansion draft, I think they were expecting him to be Artemi Panarin or Tarasenko or some of these other guys that he played with over in the KHL, and they saw that he wasn't really quite that level. He still had things to work on in his game. He's a 30-year-old guy. He comes over here. He's playing with the first line all through the training camp and everything else. All of a sudden, James Neal comes back right before that first game, and Shipachyov goes from the first line to Chicago. Mm-hmm. He's going, what the hell's going on here? Mm-hmm. So he doesn't know what's happening, and then he's not fitting in. I also think that Shipachyov, when he first came here, he probably thought, okay, well, they have the expansion draft. They're going to have a couple Russian guys or somebody to make me feel more comfortable here. We all were wondering what was going to happen in the draft. They got nobody. He never felt like he was at home or comfortable or had somebody else to talk with or whatever. Like when Panarin went to Chicago, everybody says, well, he played with Kane. Mm-hmm. He also played with Anisimov. Yeah. He had another guy there that spoke the same language in that. Shipachyov had nothing. All of a sudden, he was on an island by himself. Now he's being sent to Chicago, and I think he was just like, he was discouraged. He didn't know what he was doing. His wife was obviously not happy either, and everything just finally went, well, you know what? I'm going the hell back, and the Golden Knights were like, you know what? We'd like to get that salary off our books, so yeah, it's you go, we kind of both win. Yeah.
That's a very good point that I haven't even really been talking about that much. It's just the fact that there was no other Russian on the team.
No, exactly. And then the other thing that I think we can address.
didn't know I was going to be on here, so did
panic,
not put the phone
the
on
panic
vibrate.
In Ari's face.
Oh my gosh! the panic in Ari's face when someone's cell phone goes off, as opposed to putting programming in our ears when we're doing this. That's great. I was like, oh no, I'm going to sneak in programming and screw these guys up completely. Not a big deal.
But like,
oh my god, someone's cell phone goes off. It's DEFCON 3 right now.
I thought it was
now.
Ari doing it.
Oh
again.
My Never. God, it was great.
The only time the panic is more is when he has to go to the restroom at the postgame show, and all of a sudden he's like, "Do we? How much time we got in this break?" It's like,
"Oh, dude,
the breaks are the
and
same
the
every
look
time,
in Frank's,
dude."
Frank's eyes. Like, dude, better get back here.
The postgame last night was like Clayton. He was not well. It was an interesting postgame. Anyway, so here are two things that I want to address with Shipachyov because I think they're interesting. If James Neal was healthy for the entire training camp, do you think things would have been different if Shipachyov had a chance to play with Neal and Perron?
I think it would have, because those guys are perfect for him. They like to shoot the puck. He likes to give them the puck.
So then here's my follow-up question to that. Why wasn't he playing with Perron then? Why was he playing with Marchessault and Smith? Like, I understand Marchessault because he snipes. He's a shooter. He likes to play. But you look at Shipachyov and what he could potentially be, and you see top line. You want to put him with top line guys, or at least guys that have been top line in the past. Perron, Neal just made sense. I don't understand why he didn't get that chance, and I think that might be more to do with Gallant than McPhee.
I think it's absolutely Gallant. I think the two players Gallant is the most comfortable with are Riley Smith and Marchessault. And I think he thought, let's give him two guys that are easy to work with, that already have chemistry together, that we're going to be able to keep together this whole time. They're going to be able to build chemistry, because if it's Perron and James Neal, it's not going to be consistent until Neal comes back.
Right.
So I think he thought, let's try to make this as easy as possible. Let's give him two guys that we know are going to be here every day. They already played together before. I trust them. Mm-hmm. They're both very solid players. They know where each other are on the ice. I think they were just trying to make it super easy.
But it doesn't mean Shippy does. Like it's easy for Gallant to put him out there because then he's not a liability. But it's not easier for Shipachyov to play with guys that don't really fit his style.
Yeah, I don't know if Perron fits it that much better.
Neal does, absolutely.
I think Shipachyov just needed to work on his game, and he just refused to do it.
What about the trade? Do you think there was a trade? Lined up, ready to go.
I don't know.
Because Shippy says no. McPhee says yes.
Well, Shippy hasn't said no on record, has he?
He said it in that interview.
He said no trade?
He said that there wasn't a trade that he knew of, I believe.
Man,
was a quote.
That one, I'm...
Now, then again...
We'll never know the answer.
It was a translation from Russian to English, so I'm not... My Russian is not very good.
Yeah.
It's not 100%.
100%.
100%.
I don't know if there was a trade. I am not going to sit here and call McPhee a liar.
No.
And I'm not going to sit here and call Shipachyov a liar.
Yeah.
Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. I think... Frank kind of mentioned it. I think Shipachyov was just sick of being jerked around, sick of this entire situation. It wasn't what he thought he was signing up to do. And I think it's just, and I honestly think on the ice practicing with, he didn't play that much in games, but he was on the ice with these guys in practice every day. I think he realized these guys are better than I thought they were. Mm-hmm. I can't just skate circles around these guys like I did in Russia. Maybe screw all of you guys. I'm just going to go back to Russia and dominate and get paid there and just, and I'm happy in Russia. That's where my family is. Maybe he just decided it's easier to go back to Russia.
Well, you know, Ryan, you and I talked about this a little bit too amongst ourselves in the hallways here at the station, and that where you had said that you weren't sure that he was the type of player that Gallant liked. Maybe he didn't fit in.
Yeah, I don't think
and
he
so
did.
Maybe that's why Gallant didn't put him with the best pairing out there or something like that. What has Gallant said the whole time ever since he was first named head coach? George picks the players. Mm-hmm. And I try to win with them.
Yep.
I don't think Gallant felt like he was the type of player that he could win with. So he maybe didn't put him in the best situation for him to succeed or anything else, because maybe he felt he was a liability, because this team is better than people thought it was going to be. When other teams come in here, when Detroit was in here, when Buffalo was here, Chicago, Joe Quenneville and Jonathan Toews both said it. We knew they were fast, but we didn't know they were that fast.
Yeah.
This team has a lot more talent than they thought it was going to be. And I don't think Gallant wanted to feel like, okay, well, there's my Russian superstar that makes $4.5 million a year. I'm not going to kowtow to him. I'm going to put the best combinations out there. And sometimes it's addition by subtraction. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Gerard Gallant was all that upset about Shipachyov leaving.
It's funny that you say that, because we got a call when the Shipachyov news broke and George McPhee talked to us. We opened up the phone lines on the Insider Show, and we got a call in which one of the callers said that at some point you've got to coddle Vadim Shipachyov. You've got to, you know, cater to what he needs. I don't agree with that at all. He's a professional athlete.
Like, neither do I.
Like, I understand he's in a new situation. I understand that he's changed his entire life. And that's understandable. Like, if he needs help with his wife and kids, if he needs something like that, that makes a lot of sense. But you don't coddle him on the ice. If he's not good enough, he's not good enough. And if he's not willing to work on it, he doesn't have any business being in your organization.
Exactly. Like I said, people want to say, oh, well, Shea Theodore's younger. Oh, he hasn't accomplished what Shipachyov did over in KHL. In my opinion, 6 points in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Anaheim Ducks that went to the Western Conference Finals, captaining their power play for the entire playoffs, is more than 20 seasons worth of domination in the stupid KHL.
Would you argue that the KHL and the AHL are pretty much the same league?
I think the AHL might be better. I don't know enough about the KHL to, like,
I'm with you. I think the AHL, if the AHL isn't slightly better, I think it's about the same league, just on a smaller sheet of ice.
So when people say, oh, well, it's a different, no, Shea Theodore dominated in the playoffs. He was one of the best players on the ice. He mm-hmm. captained the power play. He was sent down to Chicago. Was he thrilled? Absolutely not. He was pissed.
Yeah.
Did he go down there? Yes. And he dominated.
Just like Alex Tuck did.
And Alex Tuck's the same. Now, Alex Tuck hadn't proven himself, but Tuck is one of the best players on this entire team. He went down, didn't complain, played his game, dominated, found his way back up, and that's what hockey players are supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's not what they do in Russia, and that's not what Shipachyov's used to, but if he would have just went down there and played, and I am not sitting here pretending like Shipachyov had no chance of being a good player. I think he could have transformed into a playmaker for this team, but you have to have the right mentality, especially with a coach like Gerard Gallant that's that big on personalities and your mindset.
It's you can't put yourself above this team. You can't put yourself ahead of the guys in the room. You just simply can't, because they don't win that way. They win with Pierre-Édouard Bellemare jumping in front of a shot mm-hmm. every single time. They win with Shea Theodore going down to the AHL, not pouting about it, dominating, and then being called up, and now he's been healthy scratch 2 games in a row, which is something that we can talk about too.
And the thing is, if you were to coddle Shipachyov, mm-hmm. not only is that bad for the team because you're playing a worse player that yep. hasn't earned the time, that's every player on the team is going to notice that.
Oh yeah,
Tuck got sent down. They didn't have any problem doing that, but then they're not going to send this guy down? What, like, that's going to shine badly on the organization for guys like Tuck and Theodore and Hika and Pulkkinen and any other guy that got sent down.
What it does is it takes away this air of opportunity that these guys have been sold on with this expansion team. What opportunity? If you're going to play the $4.5 million Russian guy because he is who he is and not because he's good enough, mm-hmm. where's my opportunity? I'm Eric Halla. Where's my opportunity? Jonathan Marchessault, where's my opportunity? William Karlsson, where's my opportunity?
I agree.
You know what I mean? So,
and not only that, but let's remember this too. If you coddle him now, then you've sent the message to him and everybody else on that team that he goes by a different set of rules. Mm-hmm. And if you coddle him once, then you have to coddle him again. Yep. And again and again. And it's like, at what point does he have to stand up and be there on his own? It's not like he came to the NHL a wide-eyed young kid or something like that. That was like, oh, I'm going to the NHL. He's a 30-year-old man who's had a successful career, who knows other players in the league, who talked to them, who mm-hmm. knew what the road in the NHL was like, who knew what to expect when he came over here.
Yeah.
He didn't perform. He got sent down, and he didn't want to deal with that. And real quick, when you guys were talking about the AHL and the KHL, I don't know if the AHL is a better league, but I think the AHL is a better simulation and getting into the NHL.
That's exactly
because
right.
of the smaller
Great
ice
point.
And everything else yep. out there. So if you go to the AHL and you're going to go, oh, I don't want to be here. No, this is going to prepare you for the league that you just signed a $9 million contract for.
Yeah.
You go over there on the wide open ice and doing what you want to again. Well, that's fine and dandy, but it's not going to prepare you for the NHL.
No, you're absolutely right. And just to switch gears really quick, because I want to talk about Shea Theodore. And I know that we're kind of up against it, but I don't understand bringing him up and not having him in the lineup consistently.
Neither do I. In my opinion, if it was me, if I'm Gerard Gallant, Shea Theodore is in my lineup every single night, no matter what.
And I don't understand Shea Theodore for Brad Hunt.
That part I do understand. I understand why they're trading it. And I even asked him and he admitted, yeah. Because they're similar players, it's easier to switch them out because we can just trade them on that line and it doesn't change the way we play all that much. And they both play power play minutes, whereas if you put Shea Theodore on there with Brad Hunt, now they have to divvy up those power play minutes. Whereas if you're just swapping them one for the other, it's just, okay, he's in the power play tonight and then he'll be in it tomorrow night. They don't have to completely reconfigure how they run the power play.
Okay, that makes sense. But I just think when you look at Shea Theodore and you look at Brad Hunt, you know that Shea Theodore is going to be more important to your organization 3 to 5 years down the road than Brad Hunt is. As good as Brad Hunt has been, Shea Theodore is the future of the defense from an offensive standpoint for the Vegas Golden Knights. So I think you can have Brad Hunt in the lineup and Shea Theodore in the lineup at the same time and figure out a way to get Shea Theodore power play minutes.
I also think Colin Miller is better with Brad Hunt on the ice with him.
I agree.
Than with Shea Theodore. So, and Colin Miller is a guy that could be also part of the future of this defense. You let Colin Miller and Brad Hunt stay together. You put Shea Theodore with England. Mm-hmm. That way England's his safe backstop. Shea can go up and play on the offensive in the zone all he wants, and England's got his back. And then you keep your Spezza Schmidt line that's been solid all year.
So, in looking at the power play, because that seems to be the only hangup with having Hunt and Theodore in the lineup, we know that Schmidt gets time on the second power play. Why not Theodore and Schmidt?
I think going for just take out the whole four forwards, one defenseman
line,
agree.
And Absolutely.
Just do 3 and 2 on both power play units, and it's fixed.
That's what I'm calling for. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, but Gerard Gallant doesn't do lines. Gerard Gallant doesn't.
So, okay, let's get into this because I really want to touch on this. And then I swear to God, Ari, we'll get out of here. I know that you're a very busy man, Mr. Producer guy.
He's looking forward to his favorite show tonight. He's got to get to a nap before that.
What's the show?
What is the show?
Is Heat Wave Sports on tonight?
Oh, is Heat Wave? Oh, yeah, you got Heat Wave. I'm sorry, buddy. So here's the deal, right? I agree with you. I think that makes a lot of sense. And the reason why I think we're all calling for it right now is because we saw a little glimpse of what could be in the Toronto game. In the Toronto game, McNabb and Englund were having a hell of a time trying to get the puck out of their own zone. Mm-hmm. They were not very good at it. There was an adjustment made that apparently Gerard Gallant didn't know about because I asked him about it. And he didn't know about it. He said it was up to his defensive coach and he'd have to ask him why he did it. That's a true story. It happened. Anyway, all that being said, Shea Theodore got time with Derek Englund. And for those of you that watched the Toronto game, Derek Englund's snipe started with a stretch pass on a crappy Toronto change from Shea Theodore.
His stretch passes are things of
fantastic.
Beauty.
And it allowed Englund to get in. It allowed him to have the time and space. And credit all the credit in the world goes to Derek Englund for the shot. But that was set up because of the creativity from Shea Theodore, the awareness of Shea Theodore from an offensive standpoint to recognize the bad change, find the right guy, perfect pass on the tape, and Derek Englund made no mistake. So what I'm saying is there are three clear pairings that make a ton of sense right now if Shea Theodore is up and should not be taken out of the lineup for anything. That's Theodore and Englund, that's Spezza and Schmidt, and it's Miller and Hunt.
Agreed.
You take McNabb, you rotate him in and out when Englund needs a day off. You take Merrill and you trade him or you do something. I don't know what you do with John Merrill. He hasn't been particularly impressive whenever he's gotten in. I don't see the reason of having Shea Theodore up here at the NHL level not playing NHL minutes. Because you send him down to the AHL, he's just going to go back and dominate.
Yeah, but he's not going to be up to NHL speed, and he's not going to get to be up to NHL speed sitting on the bench either or sitting up in the press box with us.
No.
He needs to be on the ice. What do you think, Frank?
I agree with everything you guys said, but you know what? Bottom line is George picks the players and Gerard plays them.
and that's the thing. Like I'm getting the sense from Gerard, and it might just be me reading too much into it, but I'm getting the sense from Gerard that he feels about Theodore in much the same way that he started to feel about Shipachev, and that he's not,
I don't.
I you know.
I think he loves Theodore. Do you remember my question?
No. I remember. Shea Theodore. But that was before he was sent down to the AHL.
Yeah, but all he did was dominate down there. He hasn't had a true shot getting back. No. I think Gerard Gallant loves Shea Theodore. When I asked him, is he on the bubble, he laughed in my face. Who put him on the bubble?
I know.
He's like the best defenseman on the team. I don't think that is true at all.
I think Gerard Gallant's frustration is that there's too damn many defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree completely. And then one really quick thing we're going to get to. I promise, Ari. you made a start late today, so I'm just milking it for all I can. Brendan Leipsic. Now, we've talked a little bit about line combinations, and we've talked about Alex Tuch being one of the better players on this team. But Eric Haula seemed to jumpstart Perron and Neal, and that makes a lot of sense, and it's a really, really good line. Cody Eakin hasn't really found the chemistry with Alex Tuch and Oscar Lindberg. So here's what I'd like to see. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. Maybe Gerard Gallant listens to the podcast, and, you know, he'll do it.
Come on, Turk.
But move Lindberg to the center position and have him play in the middle of Leipsic and Tuch. And I think that'll be a very dynamic line because of Brendan Leipsic's ability to hang on to the puck, draw coverage, and then find the open man.
And he's fast. And
yes.
When way back in camp, I talked to Tuch. This is back when they were like just figuring out who they're going to put with who. And I just asked him, who do you like to play with? And I wanted specific players.
Yeah.
He wouldn't give me specific players, but he told me my whole career, because I'm a bigger, stronger, power forward type of guy, I like to have two fast playmakers around me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exact opposite of Cody Eakin. Cody Eakin's a very solid player. He's great on the penalty kill. He wins faceoffs. He's always got good defensive position. He's not a bad back checker. He's not a playmaker, and he's not fast.
No.
And Alex Tuch, who in my opinion is the best player on the team, and he's one of the future building blocks of this team, you need to cater to him, to his skill set.
Yep.
His skill set is, I'm huge, I'm getting in front of the net, get two fast little flies to fly around the net and feed pucks to me.
Yeah.
I could not agree more that Leipzig's one of those type of guys.
What are your thoughts?
I have to wonder a little bit, too, if maybe a guy like Alex Tuch, because he's the kid. Remember, he was at development camp when he didn't have to be here because he wanted to work with the other kids and that. He's been the consummate professional. You send me to Chicago, I'm going to dominate there. I'm going to make you bring me back. If you sent me down again, well, I'm going to do everything in my power to make it so you can't send me down there. I'm wondering if, like, maybe at the end of this season, next year or something, if then he maybe has a little bit more confidence in that he'll go up and he'll be comfortable to talk to Turk or somebody else about those kind of changes. But right now, I think Alex Tuck is going to do whatever they ask him to do. He's not going to make those kind of things.
He just happened to be here.
I agree with you guys that that would be a nice combination. And I think maybe if Alex was a little bit more confident in himself and his role on the team and then the future in that, that maybe if he spearheaded something like that, it might happen. But as long as he's being the complete professional right now and saying, I'm the kid, I'm learning here, I'm going to do everything, I don't think something like that's going to happen. Unless maybe Turk does have an epiphany or maybe he does listen to the podcast or something like that. We know that he's an intelligent hockey guy. We know that he knows a lot of different things out there. But sometimes when you have a comfort zone, and especially when you're winning the way that they are, which is surprising everybody in that, coaches are a little bit more adverse to change.
Mm-hmm. And the wrong move with Brendan Leipzig is to put him on the fourth line.
Absolutely.
And take William Carrier out. You're not giving him the best opportunity to show his talents. Like against Toronto, I understand you want to put him in the lineup. You don't really want to change too much, but that's not what he is as a player. And you're not doing him any favors putting him on the fourth line.
And that fourth line's been spectacular.
You can't break that up.
That fourth line is not only maybe the hardest working line on this team, they might be one of the hardest working lines in the NHL.
Absolutely. Hands down. So Ari is going to kill me. I'm just kidding. We're going to get out of here. It's been an interesting podcast. It's been an unexpected podcast. We thank you, Frank, for, you know, swinging by the studio and coming in here and giving us a little bit of update on you and sitting in for the final 30 minutes or whatever it is.
It's been a blast, man. Trust me, you have no idea how much I've been salivating to talk some hockey with something other than my TV, which always talks back but never answers my questions.
Exactly. So, Golden Knights go on the road this week. They got Edmonton, they've got Vancouver, and then they're back on Sunday against the Los Angeles Kings. You guys, we're 15, 16 games in the season. Has anything surprised you so far with this team?
Everything.
Everything, yep. You?
I knew that they were going to be a competitive team. I knew they were going to fight hard. But I think, like most of the rest of the league, I didn't know they were going to be this fast, and I didn't know they were going to have this much offense and that kind of goalie depth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we come back next week, we will undoubtedly talk about the Edmonton game, the Vancouver game. We'll preview or look ahead to the Kings game, and then I'm sure we'll have more crazy, wacky goalie stuff to talk about. This has been the Rink Rats Podcast. Jesse, where can people find you?
At @JesseGranger_ on Twitter and at LasVegasSun.com.
Frank, where are you at?
I'm in my living room watching TV most of the time. No, I'm at VGK Frank on Twitter, and that's pretty much about it.
I am at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Give me a follow. We can talk about a lot of good things. I got the tweet of the night last night. The third period R's chant has been retired, just like Vadim Shipachev, and I think third period R's retirement is more important than Shippy's. So that all being said, thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next week.